This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we take a look at key issues that affect students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. I'm your host, Penny Schmitz, and today we'll be talking about autism spectrum disorders. April is World Autism Awareness Month. Every year, autism organizations around the world celebrate it with unique fundraising and awareness-raising events, such as Light It Up Blue. On April 2nd of this year, the White House and a lot of other landmarks around the world were lit up blue. The event is also held on UK campus since 2013, which is hosted by Kentucky Student Council for Exceptional Children, part of the College of Education. President Trump called on Americans to do the same in their homes and to learn more about autism. Reporter Carol Tien takes a closer look at how autism is affecting young teenagers and students around us.
Autism and autism spectrum disorder are both general terms for a group of complex disorders or brain development. Autism statistics from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention identify around 1 in 68 American children as on autism spectrum. ASD is estimated to affect more than 2 million individuals in the U.S. and tens of millions worldwide. We have educational school and counseling psychologist Professor Lisa Rubel tell us what it means to be autistic.
When someone has autism, what that means is that they have differences in the way that they learn information and express themselves. And those differences result in social development and communication development, another kind of really focused interest and perhaps repetitive behaviors.
ASD can also be associated with intellectual disability, difficulties in motor coordination and attention, and physical health issues such as sleep and gastrointestinal disturbances. Some persons with ASD excel in visual skills, music, math, and art. And the causes of ASD, we have to say, are still unknown. There are genetic and environmental factors, and the research is now delivering the answers.
When you look at twin studies, when the twins share all the genes, those are called monozygotic twins, still 10% or more do not have autism in of those pairs. One might have autism and the other one doesn't. So that tells us it's not just genetics, there's something else going on that relates to environment, and that could be in utero environment.
Each individual with autism is unique, and they are hard to tell. College students with autism have various symptoms in study and daily life.
In my experience, you wouldn't be able to tell somebody with autism from somebody without autism by just looking at them. You can't do that with young kids either, so everybody looks the same. But what might be different is that the person might internally be having trouble organizing themselves, understanding how to take all this information being given, like in a syllabus, and knowing how to break it down and to plan the activities.
So far, we can tell that autism is around us, and those with autism may need our awareness.
Today, we will start our discussion by introducing two organizations working with autistic students at the University of Kentucky. To help our audience better understand, we are joined by these experts. The first guest is the consultant at the Disability Resource Center, Dr. Lisa Pickering. Dr. Pickering has worked here since 2002. She works with students on the autism spectrum and provides students with letters of accommodation, strategies, and ongoing follow-up as needed.
Hello.
And the second guest for this evening is Associate Director and Licensed Psychologist from the UK Counseling Center, Dr. Filito Alderondo. It is his 15th year working at UK. As a psychologist at the UK Counseling Center, Dr. Alderondo regularly provides therapy for students who struggle with issues related to having autism spectrum disorder. He also leads a weekly education and support group for those on the autism spectrum called Unique Perspectives.
Hi.
Thank you for both joining us this evening. So this first question is going to be for the both of you. So a survey on awareness and knowledge of autism and autism interventions revealed that by large, the public is aware of autism and its key features. Nearly two-thirds of participants knew somebody on the autism spectrum. So why do you think we need to raise awareness of autism?
When you say the word autism, a lot of people think of the ones on the lower end of the spectrum, but the spectrum is a continuum. And I think the more we can raise the awareness, the more people will recognize that IQ has nothing to do with autism. And we have a lot of students who come to college with autism who are excellent students. But that's not the issue for them. A lot of times it's more the social aspects or the awkwardness that they feel in groups.
I would just add that, you know, we want all students to be successful at UK. And so this is a group that we keep seeing kind of increasing numbers of students on the autism spectrum among the student body. And we want to make sure that we're meeting their needs just like we're meeting the needs of the rest of the students.
And so talking about the students, what does autism look like in a college student at UK?
I like to say when you've met someone with autism, you've met one person with autism. It is completely unique from one individual to the other. A lot of the students do talk about having problems with eye contact and just feeling awkward in groups. So to someone else, they may appear like they're shy. Some of the other things that we may see, it could vary from being distractible, having a hard time focusing, being very sensitive to sound and light and too much visual stimulation. So those are some of the things that we're thinking about when we're talking to someone on the spectrum.
A lot of times at the counseling center, we might get a referral from a faculty or staff person who is interacting with a student, and they're not sure what's going on. So I think this is another reason to raise awareness about autism. Like Dr. Pickering was talking about, a lot of people don't realize that these behaviors are part of the autism spectrum. And so they have a student who seems quirky and awkward and maybe is quite bright, but is somehow not connecting with other people in the classroom, has odd interpersonal interactions in maybe the professor's office or in the classroom. And so people aren't sure what to do with this, and so they refer them to us, and then we're like, oh. And the student has already been diagnosed as being autism spectrum disorder, but maybe hasn't brought that to the professor's awareness or the staff person's awareness. But we can see it because we're kind of used to looking through this lens, and we know what to look for. But you were talking about lack of eye contact, being kind of overloaded with sensory input, whether it be noise or light or distractions, things like that, repetitive kind of behaviors or movements, what people talk about in terms of stimming, doing things with their hands and fidgeting and things like that. Those are just some of the things. But we see most of the time the students aren't able to kind of connect socially. And so I know that's kind of going into some of the other questions and things that we wanted to talk about. But those are some of the things that we see that bring people in. They're socially challenged on campus.
Looking through that lens that you were talking about just a second ago, would you say that students you work with have common difficulties? Or like Dr. Pickering was saying earlier, every student is unique?
I mean, I think every student is unique, but there are some things that we see where, there might be a complaint from a student that would seem completely unreasonable to a lot of people. It's like, well, of course, if you live in the residence hall, there's going to be a dinging noise at the elevator, right? But for a student on the autism spectrum, that could be really distracting and disturbing and something that they really can't tolerate. And so whereas you might, with a student who doesn't have autism spectrum, say, well, that's just going to be what happens when you live near the elevator. And for this other person, we might really try to work to find some better situation for that person, right? And we can't always accommodate everything, but there are things where it doesn't have to be a huge change. And of course, Dr. Pickering's office helps with accommodations in the classroom and things like that, where just making some small accommodation can help that student be successful.
And talking about those accommodations and certain things like that, sometimes it's hard to step up and admit that you need help. So how do you encourage students to come and ask for that help?
Well, we are present during their summer advising conferences when new students come to campus to get their fall schedules, and we give talks and we're putting flyers out. We have a table encouraging all students who have any kind of need for accommodations to come and register with our office, because really that's the only way they should be getting accommodations on campus. A lot of times it's the parents who know that their student may or may not seek the help, but they want to make sure they know that we're there. And so we have a lot of parents who are urging their student to come in. And once we start talking, you know, the kinds of things that we're observing are maybe the student needs more time if sound and visual stimulation are an issue, or distractibility, just giving them more time to process. Sometimes students are really sensitive to different types of textures or clothing that they're on, so it may be that the particular seat we have in the testing room is all wrong for this student. So just thinking about things like being able to process. Some students find that if they're in a private room where they can get up and walk around and talk out loud and use a whiteboard, if that's the way they test, then that is the way, or that's the way they study, that's the way they need to test, and that can make a big difference. So as we talk to students and start suggesting some of these things, often we see them, oh, I didn't know that that was a possibility, and that might work for me. And occasionally when we have students who come in those kinds of meetings, either they or their parents will say, does UK have some kind of group that I can join to talk to other students with autism? And so the Counseling Center has really stepped up to meet that need.
Well, you know, we just started this Unique Perspectives group. We had another group called the Social Confidence Group, which was really for people who spectrum. And so we decided to shift at some point and not have it so much for people who are socially anxious, and just call it a kind of an autism support group. And that's worked out well. We have a core group of people who are attending right now, and they bond around all kinds of things. You know, one of the things that you often see with people with autism spectrum is kind of circumscribed interests. So they'll become really, really interested in something that's pretty unique or specific, and maybe the general population's not as into it. But it's amazing to me how many of these folks connect around similar topics and interest areas. And so they've made good connections, and I'm sometimes out of the loop. Like, I'm learning all kinds of things hanging out with these folks, and I really enjoy it. But it's nice to see them kind of understand each other. They're very tolerant of each other in terms of just their own kind of quirks and differences, and they're pretty understanding about how social interactions, especially nonverbal communication, a lot of times they will say, I don't really get things. Like, you know, I don't get sarcasm, or I don't get humor. I don't read people very well. I don't understand when people say things, but their body language is saying something different. I don't get the other message that everybody else seems to get. And so when they talk about that, they're all bonding around those things. And it's really nice to see them get that support. And so we really hope to grow that program. And it's nice to have this opportunity to be on the radio. And hopefully there's some folks who maybe are diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum that didn't know this exists. And so they'll maybe seek that out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, like we've been talking about, autism is diagnosed on a spectrum, which means they are level of a diagnosis. In the case of one UK freshman, you might not even know he has autism when you first meet him. Hear more from our reporter, Carol Tien.
he found he was different from other students since elementary school.
Found that I was fascinated with certain subjects more than my fellow students were. So from an early age, I had a fascination with history. And one symptom of Asperger's is fixating on a certain subject and kind of becoming infatuated with that. And another facet where I think that was a major issue that seemed noticeable both to me and to my peers was the facet of eye contact. So eye contact among people with Asperger's is typically hard to maintain.
High-functioning autism is a term applied to people with autism who are deemed to be cognitively higher functioning than other people with autism. It is also called Asperger syndrome. Duncan is a student with a high IQ, which is 134, who also has autism, and he has been very successful. Baron just studied in UK for 2 semesters, but he is hoped to graduate in 1.5 years, since he has done most of classes during high school. However, being treated differently is one concern that he has.
I think a problem that I've had for a very long time, and a problem that other students have, is they live in fear. They live in fear that being attributed with a label, for instance, Asperger's syndrome, he has Asperger's syndrome, they fear that that can impede their social interaction, that people will see them differently and not as who they truly are, that they have abilities just like anyone else.
University of Kentucky Disability Resource Center is the first place Baron asked for help from once he went to the university. He says DRC is really effective in making students with certain disabilities equal to other students.
University of Kentucky Disability Resource Center provides services to the university community so students with disabilities have an equal opportunity to fully participate in all aspects of university life. UK Counseling Center provides confidential psychological counseling to currently enrolled UK students and consultation services to currently enrolled UK students, faculty, staff, and caregivers. So this next question, I'm going to direct it to you, Dr. Pickering. So what specifically does the Disability Resource Center do to help students with autism? We talked a little bit earlier, but if you could just expand, please.
Well, initially we spend a lot of time just talking with the student to figure out where are the areas that they have experienced some problems. Honestly, there are a number of students on the autism spectrum who don't need extra time on exams. They'll explain the only issue they've ever really had was connecting with people. But when I hear students talk about those idiosyncrasies about needing to have control over the organization of the room, the lighting, the texture of the chairs, being able to move around, not being distracted even by the writing of other students, we can put them in a private room, we can extend the time of their exams to 50% more time or 100% more time. Some students prefer typing on the computer on essay exams. We can make that available instead of handwriting. It just depends. Now, there are some students, the issue isn't so much testing accommodations, and they do fine with notes, but the issue they have is not wanting to go and talk to their faculty and ask for help, and they need tutoring, and they don't want to go and ask for that. And so we are always exploring new ways to reach out and provide that kind of support on campus. So we work in collaboration with the study and the student support services and other groups on campus to try to help students find that kind of tutoring support. One thing I always think about when I'm talking about the subject. When the Big Bang Theory first came out, I had a lot of parents come in and say, Sheldon is our son. That's it. And I think that that show has done a lot to really expand the awareness of autism, because a lot of the students I work with remind me of Sheldon in one way or another, of just needing to be organized. There's a lot of frustration when things aren't in that kind of controlled environment.
And going along with that, I know Sesame Street just released a character this month named Julia, and Julia is presented having autism. What is feedback that you've seen from that?
I don't work with that level of group that watches it, and I don't watch Sesame Street anymore. My kids are grown, so I couldn't really say. Have you?
No, I'm not aware of that character, but I think that's great.
I do too. Yeah. I think it's wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dr. Alderondo, how would you say that the Counseling Center helps students with autism?
Yeah, you know, so I already mentioned the group, but aside from the group, you know, we see students just in general for anxiety and depression, dealing with stress and transitions, eating disorders, alcohol problems, you know, the whole range of things that sexual assault, just, you know, a number of things that students can come in with. And so a lot of times students on the autism spectrum are also struggling with other psychological concerns. And so we often see people who come in who have anxiety issues, but they are also autism spectrum disorder. And so it's not uncommon to see autism spectrum folks who have obsessive compulsive disorder. And so, you know, that those are some of the ways that we see folks. They come in for other things. And, you know, of course, we work with students not just on diagnosable psychological disorders, but on what we call problems of living. And that might be, you know, that someone's parents are getting divorced, or that a parent's lost a job, or that the parents are moving out of the hometown that the student grew up in, or their sibling problems back home, or financial issues, or roommate issues, or any of those kinds of things. And so, again, I would say most of the time, a lot of our folks on the autism spectrum are lonely here on campus. They are having a difficult time navigating kind of the social scene here at UK. It's a big university. It's hard enough for a lot of students to kind of navigate that. And then when you have these additional kind of communication barriers and issues kind of connecting with people who don't understand autism spectrum, I think it just poses additional challenges. And so a lot of times they feel excluded or rejected, or they're not sure how to connect with other people, and it just becomes an additional challenge. And that's a lot of the reason people. So we provide individual therapy. We have general therapy groups that are not just for people with autism spectrum. That's for a lot of people who have various issues that have some underlying component of relationships or interpersonal connections. And so, but individual and group therapy are kind of some of the main ways that we serve these students.
Yeah. And talking about those connections, some may say that students and staff may have a hard time connecting to someone with autism. Maybe it's a student in their class. Mm-hmm. So how would you suggest students and professors treat those students with autism? What's a good way to make that initial contact if you're unsure how to do so?
Well, you know, I would just say, I think for students, sometimes the way that students deal with that is to avoid people, right? And I would say, just don't avoid them. Try to reach out and be inclusive, and invite people along, and invite someone to lunch, or ask them to come to a group outing or whatever. Because again, that's some of what I hear, is that people feel kind of left out with those things. And then for faculty and staff, just to be aware of the symptoms and to know. I think sometimes it's perplexing for staff and faculty who feel like students have demands that seem unreasonable. And it's not really demands, it's just, you know, Dr. Pickering was kind of saying before that, you know, people have to have this sense of control, or routine is very important for people a lot of times with autism spectrum. So allowing some kind of routine and allowing some of that, what that person needs in the classroom or whatever setting it is, and knowing that some of these requests might be coming from that and not because they're just trying to be unreasonable or entitled. And I think when people have the idea that this is an entitled student that is asking for way too much, the empathy goes away. But when people realize this is part of how this person interacts with the world, they can accommodate better and kind of meet the student where they are and help them be successful.
And honestly, I think our faculty are really wonderful about when they have questions, they call the Disability Resource Center. Mm-hmm. And we have dialogues often. Sometimes they will come over and discuss in our office, what can I do to help this student? Sometimes when students do get frustrated or they say something that is really out of the norm and it sets faculty off, they get reported through the students of concern. And our director sits on that group. And we are always aware of, and that group is also very sensitive to if this is a disability issue. We want to respect that. And so we're very involved with them. Sometimes students with autism don't want to go to meet with a faculty or with a group that says they have to come and talk to them. For instance, with disability or discipline issues, I've gone with them. And, you know, different ones of us have accompanied them to just kind of break the ice and help them make that gap bridged, you know. So, it's very individual. We had one student who didn't know how to ask a girl out. He didn't even know how to talk to a girl. And we had a graduate student in the office who met with the student on a weekly basis. And they started meeting in the coffee shop, and he would just model, you know, different things that the student could do and encourage him to try it. And so they did that for a semester, and I don't know if he ever actually did talk to a girl, mm-hmm. but at least he started talking to other people. So we do what we can individually. It's case by case.
I see. And unfortunately, we are running out of time, and I want to ask you one final question. So if you had to leave our audience with one thought this evening, what would it be? Dr. Alderondo, we'll start with you.
Sure. Just know that there are a number of people on campus and in the local community that have autism spectrum, and be sensitive to these kind of interaction differences and try to be inclusive and reach out to them socially. Don't avoid them.
Okay. And Dr. Pickering?
I would actually absolutely agree that if you see someone who seems shy and they're not really doing eye contact, reach out to them, go and sit with them, have a conversation with them, because often they're very bright people, you know, they're interesting and they want to belong, and they can become, you know, part of the crowd. And I think that they people are people. We all have something to, you know, to add. So.
Well, unfortunately, that is all we have time for this evening. And as we've learned tonight, there are many ways for people with autism to have treatment and many ways in which we can help them out. We would once again like to thank our guests, Dr. Lisa Pickering and Dr. Felito Alderondo. Stay tuned for more commercial-free programming on 88.1 WRFL-FM, Lexington, Kentucky. I'm Penny Schmitz. Good night.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.